Good morning. I had a dream, and it's a rare assembly dream the other night. I'll spare you all the details, but Jody Beiler had joined dance group. I've been assured that this was indeed a dream and is not likely to happen. So I start with a confession. I don't feel like I'm very good at inviting people into my space or at gardening. I can very easily be that get off my lawn guy. Actually, I have been that guy. I'm bothered by the fact that a snow shovel I bought for our renter was borrowed and didn't come back for days. My wife, Bethany, appropriately rolls her eyes and says it's not important. And when it comes to gardening, I have a plant and hope something happens philosophy. Patrick is a much better gardener. I know this because I watch him do it in our front yard, where several of us have raised beds. He actually tends the plants. He leaves Asian pears at our front door after the raccoons steal the ripe ones from our tree. I have come to accept it was raccoons after a long period of wondering which person had the gall to perform this heinous crime. The theme of this series is gates and gardens, tending our spaces and letting others in. Wiser people than I will speak in the coming weeks, including my wife. Patrick and I were asked to talk about this theme in a broader context of city and community. When it comes to community, it's easier for me to be generous or want to be generous. In the past 18 months, I've been witness to and part of a process to craft an economic development strategy for our region. I'm not an economist, but I have been known to play one on TV. I've gathered with about 100 people to set goals for the South Bend Elkhart region, the part of the world that most of you know is Michiana. I sit in rooms with people who are setting strategies to grow this place and make it a better place to live. The overarching goal is to grow per capita personal income. And I've written a plan that reflects our work. So I find myself spending a lot of time with people wearing very nice suits, people who run companies and employ hundreds of people, or who are, to put it simply, wealthy. As a journalist, I'm accustomed to writing about people who make more money than I do. But the other morning, I was in a room of about 100 people who had a collective net worth of probably approaching $1 billion. And so as I encounter wealth and prosperity, I think of Wendell Berry's Mad Farmer, whose 1973 Liberation Front poem is still chock full of wisdom generations later. The phrase that has been bouncing around in my head a lot is, take all that you have and be poor. As a journalist and a freelance writer, I sit in these meetings with an opportunity to help shape conversations and the process, and I wonder how to best do that. I think that the scriptures that the worship committee selected for this morning are simply fascinating. The prophet Jeremiah asks us to pray for Babylon's well-being. If things go well for Babylon, things go well for you. You could change the wording to, if things go well for Goshen economically, things go well for you. Or, it's not a leap, given our president, to change it to, if things go well for America, things go well for you. But who is you? Is it white Americans? Our racist president says so. As followers of Jesus, clearly the answer should be different. D.L. Mayfield, whose writing I have come to love, said in her book, Assimilate or Go Home, it becomes difficult to claim the blessings of God amid an economic system that benefits you but not your neighbor, and a country that claims to love the poor and huddled masses but fiercely hoards her wealth and opportunities starts to look increasingly sinful in the light of a longed-for kingdom where a loving God is in charge. Let me read that again. It becomes difficult to claim the blessings of God amid an economic system that benefits you but not your neighbor, And a country that claims to love the poor and huddled masses, but fiercely hoards her wealth and opportunities, starts to look increasingly sinful in the light of a longed-for kingdom where a loving God is in charge. This longed-for kingdom is not of this world. The 1 Corinthians passage for this morning urges us to deal as sparingly as possible with the things of the world, with the things the world thrusts on us, and tells us the world is on its way out. Many of us in this congregation are in the world. We teach in public schools. We provide medical care for the poor. We work to build a kingdom that simply isn't of this world. Caitlin Curtis, a Potawatomi woman who is a writer and Christian mystic, reminds us, quote, "We are the weapons beaten into plowshares. We are the working towards shalom. We are the kingdom come." As a full-time professional journalist for more than 20 years, I worked not to lose my soul, to not be overcome by cynicism, to shape coverage with ideals shaped by assembly, but also accounting for a range of voices. Since I lost my job and gained a new life 20 months ago, I feel a freedom to own who I am and what I believe. Though for more than half my life I've had a voice in local newspapers, I'm more willing to risk my reputation by using that voice in a different way, but it's still an ongoing challenge. I am a white male with some influence. I have white privilege. So how do I recognize it, do my inner work, and give it away? Corey Martin, the chaplain of the Elkhart County Jail, who's a dear friend to a number of us, says that being a follower of Christ may be less about advocating or trying to make political change and more about being with people and spending time with them. On Monday mornings, I have coffee with five other white males with influence at the Electric Brew. We span work and political spectrums, and we call each other out and process struggles and do shape each other's thinking. And I think it's good, healthy work as we continue to try to live faithfully in this community. But what's clearer to me than ever is the need for me to make room inside my gate, in my garden, for people who are not like me, particularly given how often I hang out with people of means, I need to spend time with poor folks. Since I'm a white male, I need to listen to women and people of color. And since I'm a liberal, I have to hang out with Republicans, listen to them, and engage in conversation. I actually want to utilize an idea I heard on Jen Hatmaker's podcast and throw a meal with a diverse table full of people unlike me so we can discuss our differences. I felt a call to follow Matthew 25 more closely, or at least in different ways. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was homeless and you gave me a room. I was shivering and you gave me clothes. I was sick and you stopped by to visit. I was in prison and you came to me. That last one about prison is why I'm a volunteer in the Elkhart County Jail Ministry and go to a book group most Tuesday afternoons. With Corey Martin and some other volunteers, I sit in a room with men charged with crimes. We talk about whatever book we're reading, but more about our faith and our lives. I'm the assemblyite speaking his truth. Ryan is a former soldier struggling with having killed someone while in the military. Dan is a kind, sweet man now serving a long prison sentence downstate. And what I've learned from this book group is that we are all seeking God's face, and we don't have to agree on how to do that. It's not about being right. It's about seeking together and learning from each other. The guy in the bow tie who gets to walk out of the jail after an hour isn't really that different from the ones in blue scrubs and slide-in sandals who then go back to K-Pod. We are the kingdom together. Wendell Berry's Mad Farmer urges us to love someone who does not deserve it. And when you break it down, that's really all of us, isn't it? It's easy to judge. I happen to excel at it. Let's forego the gates and walls and, as a church, try to follow the slogan of all places, Planet Fitness. The world judges. We don't. The world needs more than ever Christians who want the best for others and believe in an expansive you. Caitlin Curtis tweeted, "There is an entire generation of us trying to decolonize ourselves and actually find the Jesus of the Gospels. I pray we can do it with the help of the church, not in spite of the church." As followers of Christ, we must seek out those not like us. We must spend time and listen. We must decolonize ourselves and let them, whoever them is, in our gardens and inside our gates to share the bounty. The world wants to build prosperity and hoard it. The church and the people who are part of it should build loving communities full of salt and light and justice and mercy. Love should flow like milk and honey, given as freely as we can to everyone who could possibly be called you.
Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile. A reflection on living in exile. On August 30th of the year of our Lord 2015, I moved with my spouse to the city of Goshen, Indiana, and entered a new period of exile. Okay, I have some clarifying to do. I'm not your typical person living in exile. I don't come from another country, though many of our neighbors can legitimately claim that they do. And although I lived the previous 8 years of my life in Washington, D.C., I wouldn't say I was from there. Where I am from is Fort Wayne, Indiana, the place where I spent the first 18 years of my life, growing up in a suburban household on the northeast side as the eldest son of 8 children born of 2 politically conservative, devoutly Catholic, middle-class parents. The same place that I went back to live and work for periods later in life. But even with all that, to me, moving back to Indiana was like moving into exile. Do you ever get that feeling? Do you ever feel like you're in exile, even when the people and places around you are unmistakably familiar? My exile began when I started to see the world and my place in it through new eyes, differently than the people that I grew up around. First came my spiritual awakening. A volatile period of doubt and skepticism when I was in middle school and early high school that transformed my view of God and the cosmos. This was a period of wrestling with overwhelming doubt as my belief system seemed to crumble away brick by brick and piece by piece. But gradually, a new worldview emerged to replace it. This one centered in love and compassion and bringing with it a new appreciation for the importance of mystery and mysticism in life. Then came the end of high school and my political awakening. This is where I started to learn about systems of injustice and oppression in the world. And, wait a minute, I benefit from these systems? My government is complicit in them? How could I have let myself be blind to these things? And a chasm opened up between myself and the world that I grew up in, one that seemed to get wider with each prolonged period of living abroad, with each person that I met with a new perspective, with each encounter that challenged the way I imagined the world around me and my relationship with other people in it. Okay, I confess, I kind of like living like a person in exile. Let's face it, we can't go back to the certitude and comfort of the world that we grew up in, even if we wanted to. But even with that loss, there come a few perks. The first perk for me was discovering that living like a person in exile, I don't take my relationships for granted. I try not to get too comfortable with people who seem familiar to me, and I look for the nuance and the mystery in the people that I think that I know. I strive to see them and love them for who they really are. The second perk of living in exile is that I seek out relationships with people who are different than me. It's ironic that as a white male, people who I often have the hardest time connecting with are those who were most familiar to me growing up. Straight, Christian, conservative, white folks, especially men. probably because I see the world so differently now. I don't see this as a problem. I see it as an opportunity to seek out and hear the voices of people who have different experiences, to try to see the world through their eyes, and to confront my privilege as a white male. The third perk of living like a person in exile is that I don't get too comfortable with the power structures that govern my life. Okay, I was a little stunned after the election day of 2016, so maybe I got a little complacent for a few years, but now I'm trying again to see the world around me with fresh eyes, in particular my community here in Goshen, to see it through other people's perspectives and to reimagine my role in it. And to me, even in these politically rocky times, I see so much going on to protect and strengthen the connections in our community of Goshen, our garden here. From the window to our safety networks, to the community-based English language classes at Goshen College, to the effort to challenge the prospect of an immigrant detention center here in Elkhart County, people are coming together as a community and confronting forces that would tear us apart. To me, these are signs of compassion and hope in a time where the world around us seems like a strange place sometimes. So let's embrace the mystery in others. Let's embrace the mystery in our world around us. Let us work to seek the welfare of our city, where some of us feel like we're living in exile.